I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's an S-Pod thing, the podcast revisiting S Club 7's insane TV show.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone's binge-watched this, anyone who's not on drugs.
Thank you for bringing this into my life. It was honestly truly appalling.
Guests helped me analyse the show in more detail than anyone ever asked for.
It feels weird to me to say the phrase sex object in a show that was aimed at six-year-olds.
Do you think this is one of the problems with the show is that 7 is too much?
It's an S-Pod thing from Great Big Owl.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, I'm John Holmes. It's the One Show Show, the show that follows television around with a small bag, picking up its shit and putting it in the metaphorical podcast bin. For clarity, I'm talking about the One Show, what with it being shit. This is part two, so as always, if you'd like to go back and listen to part one first in order for any of this to make any sense whatsoever, then now would be the time. Joining me this week to go through the One Show like a virus are Mark Haynes and John Long. Well, we should talk about the second episode as well then, because we were in safer hands, I'd say, presenting wise, weren't we? We were with your favourite Gethin Jones.
Yeah, and Alex Scott. But I mean, there was a very much a difference in when you watch it. You suddenly go, well, this is going to be less fun because they are, you know, reliable. I mean,
but they again have like that hollow. They had a bit of banter at one point where I realised it has the tone of banter. But if you actually wrote down, like they showed a clip, they were getting ready to show Natalie Imbruglia, and so they showed a clip of her on Neighbours, and Alex just went, "I remember that," and then Gethin went, "Oh, I'm sure you do," and then they all laughed like that was a joke.
She started out as an actor on Neighbours when she was just 16. There she is with Brad.
I remember that.
Of course you remember that.
Where's the joke? What does that mean?
So weird.
I had to rewind and go, was he insinuating, like, yeah, you're old? I couldn't work out what he was trying to, what the joke was.
No, they're just saying words for the sake of it, aren't they? It's live television, and so it's just say words, say things. They might not make sense, it might not follow on from what happened before, but if we say words, it'll be over soon.
And then actually, when the guy, I can't remember his name now, maybe Greg James, is it, the radio guy?
Yeah.
When he comes in, because he's actually the opposite, he's used to radio where you have to fill a lot, and so actually he's quite good in a pinch.
He was. Yeah.
He makes just a couple of jokes, and because they're actual jokes, he's tearing the roof off the place.
And there he is, Radio 1's Greg James.
Hey, Greg!
Hi, guys. Yeah, that's me on my way to my first ever Natalie Imbruglia concert. I thought I'd draw you with the England hat.
Yeah. You can flop the hair around to Torn all you like, can't you? That's the thing.
You can. She's a certified pop legend. So because of COVID, we've been kept apart. It's not any, for any other weird reason, but it's nice to see you from a distance.
Hi, I'm giving you a hug.
I have to watch you on telly. It's a great show, guys. Keep it up.
It's making me think the One Show would be a great gig as a comedian. Because you'd go in and everyone would be like, oh my God, this guy's saying actual jokes.
But sometimes they don't like that, and they do slightly kill the atmosphere when people are having fun. They sort of go, this is not the time or place to be entertaining.
Oh, actually, you're true. Didn't you mention earlier when Richard Osman tried to deviate from the script, Jermaine was like, hang on.
They do not like it, because I suppose it's what you were talking about, John, which is the fact that it is so regimented with content that you just have to get through it. There is no time to start messing about, doing wheelies, showing off.
No spare seconds.
Grandstanding.
Right.
No, they just want you to get through to the end so they can stop. That's all it is. I mean, this was, by anyone's standards, one of the most uneventful episodes I think that's ever been on in its history. Two great, big, huge, important shows in One Show history, and that this was as boring a show as they've ever put on. Really, I mean, you know, Natalie Imbruglia is hardly going to set the place on fire.
No,
but especially when she's talking about new music she's got coming out. Then there was a section, obviously that was celebrating someone who did good deeds. There was a chat about a podcast. No one wants to hear about podcasts. No, nobody wants to.
The good deed was really underwhelming as well because they made a big fuss of it, and then at the end it was a curry. They just took them out for a meal.
This was absolutely staggering.
The
wasn't
worst
it?
Booked basic open goal that you knew was coming up, yeah. And you knew what the end was going to be, and somehow the one show didn't see it.
Coming up, Jamie Oliver hiding inside a pizza box.
Say what?
Confused? Yes, we are, but so were Tina and Aki from Leeds. But it's all part of this week's One Big Thank You, which we'll be finding out a little later on how we and Jamie surprised this amazing couple who have been working tirelessly to help local homeless people.
Unsung heroes for sure.
So this section was a guy, they were called Aki and Tina, lovely couple who had worked really, really hard to feed hungry people over the last couple of years. They seemed absolutely delightful. Their kids really liked them and they just seemed ace. They seemed really, really nice.
Yeah.
And so this was a section called One Big Thank You. And it had Jamie Oliver, and they kept on going back to Jamie Oliver in the studio and going, "Yup, Jamie, coming up now." There was a bit in the film where it cut back to the studio. And it cut back to show Jamie Oliver sitting there really smugly smiling and laughing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you know, here we go.
We've sent round our one show pizza man, but that's no ordinary takeaway he's delivering. He's kicking off a special surprise.
Oh, someone's at the door.
The obvious thing was, by having Jamie in the studio, by having, you know, Jamie on the video, it was so obvious that he was going to be involved in it. And he wasn't. It was just a pizza delivery guy.
Hello, Tina and Aki. Yes. I brought you a little tasty something.
This pizza guy turns up at the door to deliver an iPad, which has got a thank you message.
Whatever they're expecting, it isn't this.
Hi, Tina. Hi, Aki.
Jamie Oliver here. OK, so I'm here on behalf of The One Show to say one big thank you.
Other celebrities, including Jermaine Jenas off The One Show.
It's Jermaine here from The One Show. We've heard all about the great things that you've been doing, cooking for your community, and we wanted to say a massive one big thank you for your efforts.
Yeah, and as you say, the hairy bikers. He sort of filmed it in a hotel, like they've finally consummated their hairy relationship.
And their wives have kicked them out.
Yes.
So they're staying in a travel lodge. And then he said, but go to the end of your drive. And they were like,
it's Jamie Oliver. Yeah. It's Jamie Oliver. All the hairy bikers, they're at the end of the drive.
So if you'd like to walk to the end of your drive, there's a few people there that you might recognise.
And you can see them trying to pick out Jamie Oliver out of their group of mates, and he's not there.
But Tina and Aki's final treat is still to come.
I have one more surprise. We've heard that you both love a curry. Who doesn't, right? So we've arranged for a meal at one of your favourite restaurants. So there's a car waiting for you to whisk you away. So fill your boots and have a wonderful night and enjoy. Lots of love.
Also, they don't show the curry because my girlfriend was watching with me and she's from that part of the world. She was like Leeds and Bradford way and she was like, oh, is it Akbar's? That was a really good one. And then they didn't show actually where they took them. They just took them there. And then that whole meal, I like to watch that meal because I bet the whole meal they were just waiting, when's he going to come out of this kitchen?
He's going to be there, isn't it? And they're going to say, and it was Jamie who cooked it.
What they clearly said was, look, we've got this great idea because of this brilliant couple who've been doing the food. And Jamie Oliver, what we'll do is go, Jamie, let's go and surprise them. I'm not blaming The One Show for this. I'm blaming the fat-tongued chef, right? They obviously went, Jamie, let's take you to Leeds and you can be the pizza delivery guy. And it'd been amazing. And he just went, fuck off. I'll film something at best. That's got to be what happened. Because there was no... Just the effort they'd gone to with for nothing was ridiculous. They'd even got a lorry with a screen on it showing the clip of Jermaine Jenas saying, well done.
There was lots of expenditure that could have gone into this couple's great donations and charitable work. And instead we did something that they didn't get anything out of it. Yeah. Other than, you know, The One Show got to say, aren't we great? I mean, it was just... The funny thing as well is when they had all their friends and neighbours, so they went to the end of their drive and, oh, someone's got to drive, someone's doing all right. they showed them all waiting on this sort of, like, waste ground area, you know, playground bit. But there was one tree and half of the people had sort of like hidden behind this thin tree. Like they were waiting in surprise. The actual visual of that really made me laugh.
Surprise party is definitely an all or nothing thing. Half of you can't commit and while the other half stands
The tree was so thin. Like, yeah. Not one person could have hid behind it, but they made the decision not to stand in front of it.
They did it in a big long line. Yeah. Like a 100-metre line of them all in a single file.
The Jamie Oliver thing, I can't understand why he was there. In any capacity, he didn't need to be on this show. And I might even make this the cover of the podcast this week. But I live not far from Jamie Oliver. And between our houses, and it makes it sound like when I say between our houses, that
living near Jamie Oliver, someone's doing all right.
I haven't got a drive. When I come out of my house every day, there's dog shit out there. There's someone who just puts dog shit out there. Probably Jamie Oliver.
Jamie Oliver.
But between our houses, so there's a square. And in the square, there's a public toilet. And it's a good public toilet, this one. It's not for your doggers. It's for elderly people who live in quite a rarefied neighbourhood. And it's very well maintained. And on one of the windows, someone has written in like a sort of chalk, they've written, Jamie Oliver is a cunt. Right? And it points in the direction of his house. So every time he crosses the square, if he glanced to his left, he'd see it. And it's in a chalky thing, but weirdly, it's been there all summer. And no one's taken it off. No one's addressed it. And I saw it today, and I thought, that is brilliant. Anyway, it's been there long enough now that I think I can apply for it to be listed.
Like with the Banksy, where they put some perspex over it.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be great? Inviting him down to see if he wants to unveil it now.
Well, he wouldn't. He'd just do a message on video, wouldn't he?
Yeah. And now to open, we've got the hairy bikers.
Yeah. The fact that you couldn't even get the hairy bikers to turn up. I mean,
Man. Yeah, it was. I found it very sort of like this was a bad show. With the film was about Solihull's driverless buses. And
I like that bit.
And then there was a big thing about recycling. And what this one
that
was not like your idea, John. That they've gone through and gone, let's hang this on Back to the Future and vintage, and that all works together. This one was just chaos.
Every now and then, do they have an episode where they get rid of the stuff that's been backed up for a bit?
Yeah,
they
just
can't hang on anything else.
Yeah. And like the person outside Mark's door who did a shit, indeed, is basically it's backed up for a bit and they've got to get rid of it wherever they can. And that just happened to be at 7 o'clock last night.
Oh, I love it.
That's the whole driverless
can
buses.
Can we talk about the buses? Yeah.
Buses have seen plenty of changes over the years, from trolley buses to double-deckers, even the bendy variety. But one thing that has always been considered essential is the driver.
It sounds really exciting, driverless cars, and they showed the buses, which have a pleasing sort of evil Transformer look about them.
They do. Yeah. Why don't they just look like normal buses? Why have they made them weird?
They put a sharp bit on the front, as if to kind of go, these are so safe that we can put something which, if we touch you, you'll die on the front. But what it was a thing where they were saying, well, of course, drivers have been replaced with safety operators, and the safety operator, where he sits, is in the driver's seat. Front of a steering wheel.
And there's two of them.
The onboard computer is in control, and the traditional bus driver has been replaced by a safety operator who must be on board in case anything goes wrong.
And why are they still wearing the uniform of a bus driver? Why do they always have to wear those cheap white shirts that they get from Matalan?
With those dark blue sort of bus drivers and prison wardens have the same outfit as, but slightly different shades.
Yeah.
Man.
But yeah, it was insane because you go, right, okay, so you've got driverless buses, but you can't operate them without a driver. But the only difference is he can't touch the steering wheel because it's doing its own thing. They said they were £250,000 each. I mean, I don't know what a drivable bus costs, but it's cheaper, presumably. So you'd literally got a more expensive bus, but you still need one, if not two, people there to, just in case it ploughs into some pedestrians.
I think the saving would be on the salary of all the staff.
Yeah.
So those guys are getting paid to sit there and watch the steering wheel drive itself.
Yeah. So, I mean, but what they said the point of this was, they said that a lot of accidents occur on the road through human error.
People will be concerned about safety. So if an event did happen, where would the blame lie, do you think?
A lot of accidents now occur through human error. You know, we all make mistakes. And therefore, the more we can improve and make technology take over that role, the more we will reduce the likelihood of accident.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, but the problem is, by having just a driverless bus, all the other vehicles are still driven by people.
Again, it's like a surprise party. It's an all or nothing thing, isn't it?
It is. If everything was driverless, you'd go, okay, so it works on a thing. But if one thing's driverless and everything else is still driven by error-ridden humans, you're still going to have as many accidents, if not more.
Yeah, are people just sort of distracted by the massive transformer coming at them down the road?
Yeah. The absolute best line on the whole thing was a woman who said, I don't really want to go on it, I'm a bit nervous. And then they interviewed her afterwards, and she said, yeah, it was quite boring. She said it was just like being on a bus.
Yeah, yeah. But, and do you remember what the question that elicited that answer was as well?
No.
That was my favourite one show question of the both episodes, was the guy doing it who just said to her, so, when I said to you the steering wheel was moving on its own, how did that make you feel?
When I said to you that the steering wheel is moving on its own, how did that make you feel?
Up until that point, it did just feel a bit boring, to be honest, just like being on a bus. Yeah.
Do you remember earlier when we were in the bus and I pointed at the wheel and said, that's doing on its own? How did you feel in that moment? What the f-? And then she answered really honestly. She went, we're bored.
Yeah.
I was on a bus. I love that. That was my favourite part.
They had tried to build up the whole, this is weird and unnatural.
Yeah.
Hadn't they? In a way that everyone hadn't really conveyed at any point.
So, apprehension about going on a driverless bus?
I didn't think I would be, but I think I am a little bit now.
A little bit surreal, but, you know, this could be the future, so let's see how it goes.
Safe and confident enough to get on it, and then hopefully I'll be walking off it as well.
Yeah.
It reminded me of like when the Victorians were terrified about going on a, you know, 4 mile an hour steam train in case their intestines liquefied. Yeah, that sort of sense of going, you know. The thing is, if we'd never heard of driverless stuff before, that's one thing. But you know it exists as you know, as technology, and certainly is, you know, in place around the world.
Yeah.
And it seems funny when you get people on television who have to go, I mustn't go, this is exciting. I must go, well, this is weird and uncanny. And then try and get everyone to agree with them.
In terms of one show film fodder, you know, it ticked all the boxes. It was, you know, dull subject, thing that doesn't tell a story. We all know about it anyway, and it's in a region. It had everything.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Quickly, we haven't got long. Please listen to the all-new Angelos Sandberry podcast.
It's a funny one.
Oh, my God, it's hilarious. There's so much muck in it.
Natalie Imbruglia, who was on, as you said, you know, was talking about this, the new music, first album in 11 years or something, because she'd got stage fright and writing fright or something. And I, you know, I haven't closely, I worked with Natalie Imbruglia once, And found her to be delightful. But this was when she was still in Neighbours, okay? She came over. I used to work in theatre, right? Sort of when I was at uni or just graduating. I worked doing sound in a theatre, and it was panto. And she came over to star in the panto. And she was in Neighbours at the time. So kind of, you know, I got to know her quite well at that time. And she was lovely. But, you know, I haven't followed her career closely or anything, you know. So I didn't know stuff. So there was a very weird moment when she said, it turned out that she'd spoken about having IVF. Okay, so she had quite a tough time conceiving and all the rest of it, and she's now a mother. They were talking about that, and she said, in a very celebrity way, I put out a statement to protect my privacy.
Yeah, and I think at the time, I was just more thinking, okay, how do I play this? I'll just put a statement out to kind of protect my privacy, you know, like I'll just say it and then that'll be it.
Yeah.
And you go, well, here's an idea. Don't do that. Just don't. Do that. Don't put it on Instagram, which is what she did, I think. But it did work because, as I say, I had no idea she was going through the IVF stuff. So in many ways, fair play.
Also, I mean, they did mention it again on the One Show, didn't they? They obviously, they brought that up.
Yeah.
And again, that, you know, if you've released a statement saying, I don't really want to
talk about it.
Don't then sort of go, so I hear you released a statement saying you didn't want to talk about this thing. Why don't you talk about it?
Yeah. It was weird, wasn't it? It was like, I've written a statement about my privacy. I've written on this T-shirt, which I'm going to fire out this T-shirt cannon into the stadium. And you can all read that and then just give me my space.
Man, I mean, credit to her as well. I mean, I think she seemed as embarrassed as anyone about having to sort of say there's new music out. A lot's changed in the world since COVID, and I'm not sure anyone's really ready for Natalie Imbruglia's new music.
They played two songs. Can either of you hum either of the songs they
played? No.
And then Gethin just was so up her arse, wasn't he? He clearly fancied her and was just like, we've been singing them all day in the studio.
Yeah, that's
bullshit.
Right.
Bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been singing it all day.
Still enjoy listening to it as well.
Well, what they should have, they missed a trick, because, you know, they were talking about her having babies and stuff, so I don't know why they didn't say, your song Torn, did that remind you of anything when you gave birth?
was that about episiotomy, was it? I've got that word wrong, probably.
none of us know whether you have or not, John.
No, there it's you like, go. We don't men. We're not medically trained. Yeah.
They mentioned that Greg James has got a new podcast out.
Now, Greg has a podcast coming out on Monday.
Yeah. I'm very pleased to see they're covering podcasts now. I think you should get your most offensive T-shirt out, because maybe a call will come in.
Well, I'm hoping, you know, now they know what they are, it can only be a matter of time before we're invited on to talk about the One Show podcast.
Please go on and act exactly like Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah.
Really unhelpful. Are we going to talk about buying horse boxes as our new jobs?
I'm a man that usually likes to keep myself very busy with work.
One day I'm doing stand-up. The next, I'm a DJ. But after a year and a half of cancelled gigs, I was racking my brains thinking about what else I could do to earn some money.
It was time to get creative. Time to think outside of the box.
And to get inside a horse box.
I mean,
my first question is, now, John, you're a stand-up on the circuit, right? The presenter of this was introduced as a DJ and stand-up comedian. They even showed a clip of him doing some comedy. His name, I think, was Ryan Hand?
Yes.
Do you know him? Do we know who he is?
Not a clue.
No.
Ryan Hand, sadly, is not... Now, stand-up can be a very regional thing, and there are definitely people who are really big in certain areas. Like, sometimes you meet a guy and it turns out they've been selling out Liverpool Arena and they're really big in that area, but they just don't gig down south. Just from his... He only showed about 10 seconds of his stand-up clip. I knew from that it's not the case with this guy. So he's one of those people that goes, yeah, my comedy career really took a hit when it was like, don't blame COVID on what was already a failing comedy career.
Everywhere I went, I kept spotting boxes that had been converted into food trucks and coffee shops. At the beach, by the roadside, in the park... They've really taken off. Was this the answer to my cash flow quandaries?
Looking good.
Well, I mean, but I looked at that and I thought, in some ways, you know, by buying a horse box and opening up a coffee stand, I thought, in a way, you're following exactly in the footsteps of Jimmy Carr, who, of course, you know, he opened up his key-cutting cardboard box, didn't he, a couple of months ago, and
he resoles shoes now, doesn't he? Yeah, exactly.
It did have a ring of this about going, I've had to change because of COVID, to I have to get a job because I don't actually have a job.
Yeah.
And there's no shame in that at all. But I didn't like the whole sort of, you know, they portrayed it as being a bit of a sort of fun thing to do, is buy a horse box and then set up a business in the back of it.
Selling coffee out of a hole he's cut in the side of it.
Yeah. I was most surprised in this, and it was the one thing I was most surprised about during the two shows, is a horse box cost £800. And I thought that was quite a good deal.
So I haggled with a local farmer and stumped up £800 of my precious savings for a no-frills horse box.
I didn't know how much they were, but I thought they might have been like much more expensive than that. And now all I can think about is buying horse boxes.
Yeah, and when he said £200 for a day's work at the end, I did think,
That is an unbelievable return. In one day, you've made back 25% of your business premises.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a bit of a start.
But I was also thinking, when he was sort of saying, you know, and I worked as a comedian and a DJ, and I haven't really had any work for because of COVID for 18 months and everything else. So what I've done is bought a horse box, cut a hole inside, painted it pink, and I'm selling coffee out of it. And that's my new job. And I was thinking, no, your new job is, as they've just introduced you, a presenter on The One Show, isn't it?
That's true.
That's literally what they've said.
My favourite line that he said in this was, he was sort of talking about the overheads, and he said, overheads like petrol, milk and coffee beans have to be paid.
Overheads like petrol, milk and coffee beans have to be paid.
And I thought, well, it shouldn't come as a surprise that you have to pay for milk and coffee beans when you're running a coffee shop.
He said it like, to me, those didn't come with the horse box.
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't factor it into our initial evaluation.
Things that no one could have predicted included the fact that we had to buy some milk.
At one point he goes, there was also some forms.
And then there's all the paperwork with insurances, licences and permissions to be kept in order too.
Forms!
Oh man.
He really breezes over. He goes, I mean, there's also some forms and some permits.
Yes.
And then they just briefly show him moving a bit of paper around, and then they cut straight back to a clip of him having a whale of a time in his pink horse box.
Those permits as well, you don't need. It's not like you're going to go, it took 7 months for us to get the permit to set up a horse box in the park. I mean, it was one thing. You basically send an email saying, can I put my horse box in the park? And the council write back and they say yes. That's it.
Between these hours.
I was distracted throughout the whole thing, right? Because he did this, right? You know, he's a young guy, younger looking guy, and he set up this thing with his girlfriend helping him, who is, you know, younger looking girlfriend, and they look, you know, they're a lovely white couple, aren't they? There, all looking a bit sort of, you know, good looking and glamorous and young. And because of when we're recording this and when it was on, all I was thinking of was that couple in America where it appears that the bloke has killed the girl, left her in a national park, and now he's vanished. And all I was thinking was, he's going to kill her in that horse park.
She's going to die in that box.
You know, I think it's fair enough to have a pop at him for not realising he's going to have to pay for milk. But I don't think we can accuse him of being a murderer in
life. Oh, come on. That is the next logical progression.
It really is, yeah. You know, you look desperate. How desperate do you have to be to buy a horse box?
I want to buy another two horse boxes. Are you going to use them as coffins? That is none of your business. Here's the £1,600. Give me my horse. Give me my coffin boxes.
He was that kind of person that would drive my dad mad, though, because he's like... Because the reason I said, oh, definitely no, he's not a comedian, because I know that, because comedians all have imposter syndromes. What happens is, at the beginning, when you're naive, you say, I'm a comedian, when you've done 4 open mic gigs. And then by the time you actually call yourself one, by then you're like, well, I sort of do comedy, you know. Because for some reason, they're all modest or whatever, or they're like Richard Osman, they've got imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Whereas he just strikes me as that guy who's like, I was a DJ, I was a this. He sounds like someone who's a different thing every week. And he's got a million like ideas, and my dad's like, "This is what's wrong with no one wants to just be in an office and do a job."
It's a career progression. You could see it was like, well, before the pandemic, you know, I was a comedian, and then I was a DJ, and now I'm a horse box coffee operator, and next I'm a murderer.
those are both jobs, DJ and stand up as well, that you don't actually have to make any money or do them well to claim that you are them. You know, every DJ is a DJ in waiting, isn't it? It's they're just sort of, well, you know, I've done one gig, I've got another one coming up. You'd never do that about sort of going, I work in, you know, the abattoir system. And you go, do you work every day? And you go, no, I did one day about 3 months ago, but I'm hoping to get some stuff when COVID clears. You know, you just say I'm unemployed. Again, if you're a comedian and a DJ is your job, why are you running a coffee stall in the park? You're a coffee man now. That's what you are.
In many ways, Mark, we're all coffee men.
So long as I don't have to buy anything as expensive as milk, I'm happy for that to be the case.
And do you remember the guy who went, they interviewed people to sort of say, well, and what do you think of the coffee? And obviously at one point they went, and would you believe, this is his first day making coffee. And one guy went, oh, I never believe it. Obviously because he's on TV, so he thought I better pan it up. He went, oh, I never believe it.
You wouldn't know he's never made a coffee before. Oh. That's perfect, you know, so yeah, very, very impressed.
I'd never believe that was his first day making coffee. Unbelievable. Such vacuous TV, it's unbelievable. I didn't even get on to why I'm so pissed off at JJ Chalmers. Because they brought him on to talk about recycling. Now, JJ Chalmers, I love, because as someone with a dodgy arm, myself, who hides it away because I'm embarrassed about it, I love that he doesn't give a shit. And I love that he holds up his arm that's got the damage to it, and he's visible. I love all of that. But why the fuck was he brought in to talk about recycling?
No idea.
And he didn't know what he's talking about. And also, the fact he gave as why recycling is really important was such an underwhelming, stupid fact that it almost proved the opposite. It was like, again, if you say something that sounds like a fact, people will go, oh. Because he said, if everyone in the UK recycles all the toothpaste boxes, then it will save enough energy to power 2,000 fridges. There's 66 million people in the UK. So you're telling me that 66 million people, if they recycle all that, that's all it saves is enough. I've worked it out. It was 33,000 people per fridge, which is a small market town. Where I grew up, it was like 30,000 in a town. So if everyone in a town recycles every little bit of cardboard from their bathroom, you can power a fridge. Surely that shows it's pointless.
Be fair, though, Ryan needs somewhere to put his milk.
It's silly little things like, you know, if you get a new toothpaste and it comes in a cardboard box, instead of just taking that cardboard box and chucking it in the bin in your bathroom, if you actually take it and make sure that it gets recycled, if everybody in the UK did that, it would save enough energy in a year to power 2,000 fridges for a year.
I actually looked at some of this because I get really fed up of this hectoring that you get. You're being told off in segments like this, and you're told that you don't do enough. I'm a proper recycler. I recycle everything. You know, I grew up in a hippie household where recycling was always a massive part of the agenda, and I hate being told off.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the small individual like changes in behaviour that, when you think to yourself, oh, what difference is this going to make? Well, actually, when you add it up collectively, it makes a huge difference.
And I had a look at the figures. Ordinary people are not the problem when it comes to green issues. So electricity plants, they create 27% of all of the problem emissions in the UK. That's followed by transports, cars, with 25%. So at a stroke, that's over 50% of stuff. It's nothing to do with whether or not you're taking cotton buds, snipping the ends off and putting them into your green bag.
You're right.
You get told off. Airline operators are the third biggest generators. Heavy industry making iron and steel. And then, you know, power generators.
Concrete, yeah.
This needs to be reframed and not just constantly say, You stupid idiots, you're the reason that this is all bad.
Because actually, as a nation, we're really good. About 9 out of 10 people do recycle. But it's about stepping up a little bit, trying to get that 10th person to recycle. But also, out of the people that do recycle, about 55% of us forget to do usually the things that aren't inside our kitchen. They're not readily right there and chucked in your recycling bin.
I buy very little raw steel. Right, I don't go on holiday. You know, I don't have a car. I just hate everyone just saying this is your fault. Someone on Mustique is just going, please dig up another 50 tons of coal so that we do need energy. It's a complex thing, and boiling it down to having JJ Chalmers tell you off because occasionally you put soiled tissues in your bathroom bin instead of ironing them.
Yeah, you know. It was the late, great Sean Locks. My favourite joke of his was about how when you recycle, people would tell you off for recycling. And he said he's washing out his yoghurt pot. And then he went to America and just sees like the excess. He went to a sports event where there's like jets and fireworks. And then he thinks, well, what's the point? He said, it feels like he turned up to an earthquake with a dustpan and brush. She's like, okay, I'll help. I'll just start over here, shall I? Like the futility of it. And I think that's the same thing, like you said, exactly. Even the whole point of that, he was even saying, we actually recycle most of our packaging in this country. We're really good. But there's just a couple little bits we can improve on. It's like, no.
Guys, you know, just as a final thought, and this is for everybody, you know, we can all do our bit to save electricity, by switching off the one shot.
Yes! Let's work out how many fridges that'll power, shall we?
And that brings us kicking, if not screaming, to the end of this week's podcast. They say all good things come to an end, don't they? Which probably explains why the one show never does. Please do widely share this podcast, though, if only to warn others of the televisual danger that lurks on BBC One at 7pm every weeknight. And also, because we'd like more listeners, as we do this for fuck all, and it'll be the simple knowledge that people are enjoying it that will help Mark and I pay our forthcoming horrific gas bills. But while you're remembering to do that, also remember this and remember it well when you look at the television to look at the one show. The one show also looks back into you. Goodbye.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through it in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plot like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast app. Apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter at FriendsWF.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.